In this episode, I go beyond the basics of optical coherence tomography, OCT, with Dr. Hadi Saheb from McGill University. Our discussion includes ganglion cell layer analysis, structure-function correlation, the floor effect, viewing software versus printouts, and explaining test results to patients. Visit talkingaboutglaucoma.com for my social media links, provide feedback, leave a review, subscribe to my newsletter, and support the show, which remains advertiser-free. I am now offering a value-for-value model. I'm Rob Schertzer, a Vancouver-based glaucoma specialist, and we're talking about glaucoma.
Hadi Saheb from McGill University, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rob. This is great. I love the topic and love the opportunity to chat with you and your listeners.
Thanks. OCT, how could it get more exciting than that with all the advances in recent years?
I think so.
Yeah, it's really changed the way I've been practicing. And every time I attend another session about OCTs, it makes me rethink how I'm interpreting them. And it's also making me take so much time to get through going through the OCTs because I keep going, oh, wait, that's changed now. I better look at that again. So hopefully we'll touch on some of that. Part of the impetus for us getting together is each year, it's been, 4 years now that you've co-hosted this session at the Canadian Ophthalmological Society?
I think even more. It feels like forever. I would say six or seven is my best guess. Yeah.
Okay. I've been to four of them, and it's an OCT masterclass for glaucoma, where you and colleagues go through lots of different cases. And what really struck me at the latest one was for a few of them that you'd present, you'd say, and here's a case we had presented before, and now we're thinking of it differently.
So that's... Yeah, I received a few nice comments, but I'd say the strongest compliments were from people who said that the most impactful part of the presentation was when we both admitted to some of them were real mistakes and some of them were just a different way to interpret things. And I think that really resonated with people because we've all been learning together. I wasn't around when phaco was being developed, but when I speak to colleagues that were there as phaco was being developed, they were learning on the job. And it's similar with OCT, we're continuing to learn. And you're talking about how it's taking you more time. And I totally agree with that. At first, it was just looking at the OCT and the initial diagnosis. And then eventually, it was also looking at the progression analysis. And then we added on the macular OCT and the ganglion cell analysis and the progression for that. And so now, all of a sudden, there's a number of additional diagnostic testing to look at that is taking more time. But my real opinion is there's no question it's providing better care and allowing us to detect progression earlier than we did likely with just visual fields and looking at optic nerves. So for me, it's I agree that it takes more time, but for me, it's a huge win as well for patient care. So absolutely, I'm very focused and excited about OCT. It might be my favorite part of glaucoma follow-up, looking at OCT.
Awesome. So one of the things that really changed in recent years, I'd say, and you'd probably agree, is the ganglion cell layer analysis that we do now. How did we get there? In the past, we were always talking, at least during my training, glaucoma was about the optic nerve, and the nerve was getting more excavated. And then if you get more technical, it was the rim that was getting thinned. It wasn't that the nerve was getting more cupped out. But now we've stepped back, we've gone to the nerve fiber layer, and now we're back to the ganglion cell layer.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? I think the way I try to describe it to the learners with me is that we're still looking at the nerve. We're just looking at it in a different way, right? It's all one nerve axon cell, right? And that cell starts in the ganglion cell layer, and then it travels through the retinal nerve fiber layer and then lands in the optic nerve, which is the rim that you just described. And then it goes through the nerve, the chiasm, the tract, and finally the LGN. So it's really all, whether we're looking at the nerve, the RNFL, or the ganglion cell, it's all the same. It's all the same tissue. It's just that the distribution is different and the way we're looking at it's different. The tissue, the layers we're segmenting are different, but it's all the same pathway. And I think that's one of the highlights, is that by looking at the same pathway in different areas, some snapshots are giving you more information than others. So in some patient, the ganglion cell analysis is giving us more useful information than the RNFL. and vice versa. You know, they're truly complementary. And studies have supported that. The area under the curve, for example, for your diagnostic accuracy for glaucoma is pretty similar for ganglion cells compared to RNFL. So again, it's all, yes, it's a different part of the eye that we're looking at, but we're still looking at the nerve tissue just in a different way.
And also in recent years, there's been the functional correlation with this. So this is the anatomical damage that we're looking at with the ganglion cell. And in recent years, we now have the use of the Humphrey 24-2C, where these extra 10 points within the macula are being included with our visual field analysis, because those points, which we always used to say, oh, okay, glaucoma usually starts in the peripherally, unless it's normal tension glaucoma, then it could be more centrally. But we're finding part of that is because we were doing these 6-degree steps throughout the visual field and missing early changes in the macula. So it's great when we get this correlation between the OCT and now the 24-2C.
I agree. And definitely when I'm seeing ganglion cell defects, I'm more likely to push or do more frequent central visual field testing, whether it's with a 10-2 or a 24C. So I really agree with that.
Yeah. When we get to the ganglion cell, I guess with the nerve fiber layer analysis as well, we talk about the floor effect. Do you want to comment on that for our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, my first comment is I wish it didn't exist, because my life would be so much easier for patient care if there was no floor. So yeah, the floor effect is real. And so what is the floor? The floor is that we know that even, I like to use a dramatic example when I talk to learners, even in somebody who's unfortunately NLP, who's got a 1.0 cup to disc ratio, your RNFL is still not zero. And so that depending on the machine you use, the RNFL floor is somewhere between the 40s and the 50s. And that's based on the structural tissue. It doesn't necessarily have to be live tissue, but just the remaining structure of the tissue, even after it's completely dead, unfortunately, there is still some thickness to that. So that's what we call the floor. You start with a completely healthy nerve, and if you take it from a perfect nerve all the way down to 1.0, you're going to come down and have that floor in the 40s or 50s. So why is that relevant to our discussion? The closer you get to the floor, the less likely you are to detect structural progression. And so the general principle is, in more advanced patients, you're less likely to detect structural progression. So I like to talk, and this is really simplifying, Rob, but I like to talk about three phases of glaucoma progression. And the first phase is when you have structural progression and no functional progression. So it's just structural change in the beginning and your function remains normal.
Yeah,
and then the middle, correct. And then your middle phase, where you're likely having both structural and functional progression at the same time. And then your later stage is when you've reached your structural floor, but your function continues to progress. So why do I like to separate in those three categories? Because I know what I'm focusing on most, although I'm looking at structure and function at all phases of disease progression, but earlier on when visual fields are still normal, I'm making sure to spend the necessary time on structural evaluation. And then when I've reached my floor structurally, then I'm spending even more time looking at the functional progression analysis. So that's what I like to separate into those three categories. And I think the other point when we're talking about the floor, and since you opened the topic on ganglion cells, is that there's a floor for both RNFL and ganglion cell, but there've been a few useful studies that have suggested that the floor for ganglion cells occurs later. So there's one interesting study that looked at whether RNFL or ganglion cell progression predicted visual field progression. And it showed that in the more advanced patients, ganglion cell progression was more able to predict visual field progression. So suggesting that the floor effect in ganglion cell likely occurs at a later stage than RNFL. In summary, I look at RNFL, ganglion cells, visual field at every stage of disease for all patients. But I know that earlier on, I'm looking more at my structure. Later on, I'm looking more at my visual field. And also of the structural evaluations, RNFL or ganglion cells, I'm focusing more on the ganglion cells as we become more advanced.
Yeah, I had a couple of examples today of that RNFL floor effect where I had to align the ganglion cell layer. And I wrote it down. This is a new canned phrase I created for my OCT reports saying RNFL trend all over the place, GCL trend stable. the RDF analysis, looking at each quadrant, temporal was like this, inferior was like that, superior was that. The curves were just everywhere. And you look at the numbers, they're just completely different each time. But then you look at the GCL and five visits, just nothing's changed on the GCL. So that's been very helpful. But a comment though, with relying, when you have advanced damage and you have to rely more on the visual field, that gets to be a problem too, because with the visual field, the frequency of seeing curve flattens out more as the mean deviation increases. So you start getting much less reliability with the visual field. So how do you overcome that if now you're relying mostly on a visual field? Is there another visual field strategy that you do to try to look at that function?
It's the struggle of following advanced glaucoma patients. It's for sure a struggle. I think I'm more likely to do more frequent testing. And I think as we get more advanced, 10-2s can often become more useful. And I find it more helpful in allowing me to detect progression. And also in the context of normal pressures, I'm a little bit more forgiving for visual field variability. And also I look at the history of the patient. If the patient's been variable all along, then I'm going to be a little bit more forgiving of variability. If they've been really stable along, then I'm going to worry a little bit more about the visual field looking different today. So I think we've all learned in glaucoma, one abnormal visual field in the context of everything else being stable, you don't necessarily make a big management decision based on that. I tend to call that isolated visual field defect when everything else is stable. But if you have a pressure of 19 and a visual field that's different, I'm more likely to escalate treatment that visit and not wait for the next. But if you've got a great pressure of 12, no disc hemorrhage, the nerve looks similar to what it's looked like in the past, I'll call that an isolated visual field change and have the patient come back sooner and repeat testing. And again, with visual field, it's looking at the overall trends. It's hard to make big decisions based on one alone because of what you mentioned, the variability.
There is another factor you could take into account as well. And that's when the visual field, it's quite constricted and you're relying just on 10-2 and not sure if it's worse. And that's when the patient says, my visual field's worse. So sometimes they're telling you that they've noticed things getting worse. So that sometimes comes into play in management, at least for me, for my patients.
Yes.
Another thing I have on my list here, viewing software. I definitely rely on the software when in the room with the patient when I'm reviewing the OCTs. I know if some people are still doing printouts. Do you have a comment on that? Are you a software person and big advocate for it?
For sure, a software person. My clinical practice is mainly in two different sites. And in one of them, I've had access to for 6 or 7 years. And at the other site, had got access to it just 2 years ago. And so I feel pretty comfortable sharing my feelings about the contrast between the two setups. And in that gap of 4 years where I had Forum at one site and not at the other, it really felt different. I had so much more confidence looking at my progression analysis using the Forum software. So what I do is when I'm using Forum is there's a button called structure function. And so I press on that and it really gives you visual field, RNFL, ganglion cells, and the progression for each, both event-based and trend-based. And then if you have any disc photos, it's all there on one page. So for a progression analysis software, I can't imagine something more useful. I think the caveat though is for initial visits, because for the way I look at the progression analysis, as I mentioned to you with the structure function tab, is you really do one eye at a time. And so I like on first visits, to look at both eyes compared to one another, because it helps me in my diagnosis. You know, is this glaucoma or not? Am I just labeling as a suspect? Am I starting treatment? How asymmetric are the eyes? So looking at both eyes beside the other, I find that really useful instead of flipping from right eye page to left eye page. So again, for the first visits, if the diagnosis is ambiguous, I really like comparing the right eye to the left eye in one printout, both for the RNFL and the ganglion cells. But once I've done two or three, and I'm starting to focus more on stability of disease, then I really think that the viewing software, looking at one eye at a time, is where I get the most bang for my buck. And that's what I focus on.
Yeah. And that helps too. If you're deciding, oh, I better look at the GCL progression instead of the RNFL progression, you have it all right there.
It's exactly, it's all there. Exactly. How about you? What do you do?
Yeah, to completely software viewer. I have a different OCT. I'm using the Topkin Maestro 2. So again, very easy interface. And the related to that, when do you look at your patient's OCTs? Is it when you're seeing the patient, or do you spend some time the day before or the morning of to be able to, because like I said, it's now taking longer and longer to go through these OCTs. How do you fit it in? What's your workflow?
Yeah, I've heard different versions of this. For myself, it's always when I'm seeing the patient. That's been my preference. I like to look at the whole picture all at once. And why is that? Number one, I want to think about it once. Just from an efficiency standpoint, I want to look at it and think about it and make decisions about it once. I was like that when I took exams and I speak to our learners. I said I was the learner who maybe had one question I went back to, whereas I think many others will label 10 or 15 multiple choice questions they go back to. I went through them once. I didn't think I was going to become smarter an hour or 2 hours later. And so I said, this is my best guess about this. And it's similar for my clinical evaluation. So I want to look at it once. And so I do it all when the patient's there. So I'm speaking to the patient to see how they feel. I'm measuring the pressure. I'm looking at the disc and I'm looking at the functional and structural diagnostic testing all at once. It takes a little bit more time. Sometimes it can be distracting because if patients see you, they're keen to share with you certain things. And so you have to be comfortable kind of navigating that multitasking. And often if it's nothing too urgent, I'll just ask the patient to give me some time to look at the testing. And then we get the chance to chat. But yeah, so for my workflow, it's after saying hi and how are you to the patient, it's the first thing I do, because ultimately, the glaucoma disease state is based on your structure and function. The other things we look at are risk factors, whether it's the pressure, the presence of a disc hemorrhage. Those are risk factors, whereas the disease state is that. So I like to start with that, and then I move on to looking at the chart, seeing what the pressure is, the vision, examining the patient, and then making a global decision.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, I do that too. I had tried at times reviewing the OCTs and fields the night before, but it's like you said, it's a matter of efficiency. I wasted all that time and I'm going to have to reopen those tests again when I'm with the patient anyway. So there's a lot of time wasted that.
Yeah. And an example where that would become unproductive in my mind. Let's say we all have patients with artifacts or some segmentation error or a visual, an isolate, what I just called an isolated visual field change. Yeah. And so if I have an isolated visual field change, but my pressure is perfectly normal and there's no disc hemorrhage, I'm going to call that an isolated visual field change. But if I have an isolated visual field change, but I haven't examined the patient yet, haven't measured the pressure, then I have to label it as a change. And then I have to see the patient. If the pressure is high, then I'm going to do something about the visual field change. If the pressure is normal, I'm going to label it an isolated visual field change. So all this thought process that happens so organically and automatically when I'm doing everything at once is suddenly breaking down. And at least for the way I think and the way I function, I think it would be quite challenging and distracting for me.
And then when the patient's there too, you realize there are these other things you hadn't noticed when you're just looking at the test. Oh, they also had a vein occlusion or they're diabetic or they have macular degeneration, all of which mess up our tests. And you really only notice it when you're putting it all together with the patient there.
I agree.
I have two monitors set up. It's not two, one with the EMR and one with the test results. It's one gigantic screen for me and one gigantic screen for my patients. So when the patient one is covered with a cloth, and then I do the big reveal to show them their OCT and their field, and I explain it to them. So I go through a lot of explaining each day. Do you try to explain it to your patients as well?
Yeah. I love that idea of having the sheet over it and then you show it to them almost like a surprise. My screens are open, very much visible to the patients. I tend to go with the flow of the patient. Some patients will show some curiosity and then I'll give them a little bit more information. But others are, I feel at least, looking for my global opinion. Is is my situation stable? Do I need to do anything about it? And so in those patients, they have access, they see what I'm looking at, but I'm not necessarily diving deep into the details. I do have a routine of whenever there's a photo, I tend to open it anyway. And I mention that it's a photo. I find that's a little bit more visual.
Right.
People have looked online, will have seen that before, and it's nice for them to see the nerve. I know I would be excited about seeing my own nerve. So nerve photos, I tend to deliberately describe. But for the testing, I go to follow the patient and share comments based on their level of interest.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. Did you have any other things you wanted to bring up before I ask you the bonus question?
I think when we're talking about workflow, some of us practiced virtual teleglaucoma prior to the pandemic. I started during the pandemic. And in terms of my workflow, of course, for patients seeing me in person, those patients are getting all their testing on the same day, unless there's a particular challenge with patient volumes on that day. And for those who are doing virtual visits, they're coming on a quieter day to do their testing. And then I'm evaluating their test in an asynchronous fashion and speaking to them. But even those patients, again, I'm evaluating their testing while speaking to them, while hearing from them how they're doing, while looking at their clinical information, whether it's their visual acuity, their medication compliance, their pressure. So it's a similar concept for me, whether I'm evaluating them in person or virtually. Mm-hmm. The difference is virtually, of course, the testing is done on a different day and I'm not physically seeing them in person. How about you? Are you practicing a significant amount of teleglaucoma or are you doing mostly in person?
I did when COVID had hit, and much as it sounds you were doing, the patients would come into the office and get their tests. Basically, I was doing the tests on a different day, and then I would just call them out, call them with a telehealth call to discuss the test results. Then I would be able to share the screen through Zoom and do what I would do in the office. It was actually because of what I was doing during COVID over Zoom that I installed the second monitor. Because that's when I saw that more patients than I thought really were interested in seeing the results. And I've been doing that ever since with the patients in person. Yeah.
That's great to know. I'll maybe try that out a little bit more often than I do now. Thanks for sharing.
So now a bonus question, and has to do with setting up an office. If you had advice for someone starting their practice, what did you wish you had done that you didn't do when you first set up an office that you would give advice to a young person setting up their practice?
Such a great question. I will start by saying I'm not sure I'm the best person to answer that question for a few reasons. The majority of my practice is at our academic center, right, where, as you can imagine, I'm not the person making those decisions. In terms of your specific question, I'm probably not the ideal person because I was never in that situation. I think, you know, what I understand from even non-glaucoma specialists is that glaucoma is in every practice. Even if you're not focused or catering to glaucoma patients, there will be glaucoma patients in your practice. So I think Absolutely. Setting your practice up for glaucoma care is just so critical. So you need to have all the things we talked about, so visual fields, and you can choose the one that you feel comfortable with, some kind of structural testing, an ability to take photos. I think corneal hysteresis is becoming more and more convincing that it does play a role in our diagnostic ability for glaucoma and our risk stratification. I think anterior segment OCT, I give a course about that at the academy, so I'm a little bit biased towards its importance. Yeah. I have to say that in run-of-the-mill routine glaucoma practices, I think a good gonio is pretty good, frankly. And we're still not at the stage where we can skip the gonio. I think even in a perfect anterior segment OCT, you still need to use the gonio to look for certain parts of the angle. And so I think anterior segment OCT is useful. I think if you're limited in terms of your options, maybe that would be one to skip. Although with almost all your posterior segment OCTs now, you can do an add-on anterior segment module, which is pretty space efficient and cost efficient. So it's probably worth considering that. And then think about how you want to manage these patients. So I think if you've got a significant capacity within your staff, it's always easier for patients to do all the testing on the same day. But I think for leaner teams, it just makes sense to have the testing done on a different day. And then on the day where the physician's there, you're a little bit more focused on bringing the patients in, having them see the physician and move on. So testing can be done asynchronously there. The other part I wanted to share is the work culture with your team. So how are patients' requests answered? When, for example, in some environments, patients are always encouraged to go see optometry care for any new complaints. And sometimes that's very appropriate. But in glaucoma practices, where a lot of the complaints are related to the drops, for example, mm-hmm. I really want to manage those problems myself, because I can think of an example, somebody who had an allergy, was sent to an optometrist, was given steroids because their allergy wasn't recognized, the pressure went up, then they spiked and they ran into other troubles. Whereas I think managed by an ophthalmologist or a glaucoma specialist, who would have recognized that right away, stopped the drops, moved on to something else, and it would have been a much more simple process. So I think those kinds of the work culture, how you manage patients, I have found that to be a recurrent discussion point in some practices. And I think it's worth for anybody new starting to ask those questions early on to make sure you're in the right place, there's a right fit between you and the practice you're working at.
How do you allow your patients to reach you? Is there a phone line that they're using? Do you have a patient portal in an EMR or...
Yeah. So because I work in larger practices, right, where they have their separate and their entry points for the practice, so whether it's the academic practice or the community practice, there's a phone line to reach for both those practices. And one of them, there's an email as well. But in busy practices, those phone calls are not always answered in the time that we would hope for, right? So patients sometimes are waiting. And we try to have those disclaimers that if something's urgent to present in person, whether it's at the office or in an emergency room, but that still leaves the patients with some anxiety while waiting. And in an ideal world, there'd be a way to get an answer same day for some of your concerns. And that's what we're working on.
Yeah, I think we're same here, still trying to work out the best ways to do it. And an EMR portal is good, but when the average age of your patient is 80, they're not always as computer savvy.
Yeah.
And the phone lines just don't stop. So it's hard to get through. Unless you have lots of staff.
And we're still, I don't know how it is where you are in Vancouver, we're definitely in catch-up mode. And it really feels like post-pandemic catch-up mode feels like it's at least another year, because just so many months of a few months of complete shutdown and then so many months of slowdown. And in fact, we're not up to 100% still. So you can just imagine that it really feels we're in this wheel, and it just keeps going. So I'm hopeful that in a year from now, we'll finally reach another steady state, but we're still in catch up mode where, you know, appointment delays are still beyond what we'd hope for.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you.
This has been a great conversation. I hope our listeners are getting a lot out of this once this gets posted.
Great. Thank you, Rob, for the great questions and the opportunity to share some thoughts and learn from you as well. And I wish a great, great day to all your listeners.
Thanks. Take care.
Talking About Glaucoma is a podcast of indeterminate frequency and duration, though I am striving to get back to monthly with your support. Please rate the podcast on your pod player of choice, subscribe to it, and tell your friends about it. Visit talkingaboutglaucoma.com to find all my social feeds, subscribe to the newsletter, provide feedback, and register as a guest if you want to be on a future episode. Keep informed to prevent needless loss of vision from glaucoma. See you next time on Talking About Glaucoma.